Totally Football Show, and everything you need to know about Saturday's big game is on the Totally Football League Show. Over here, it's Champions League final time. Oh, he is Arsenal. But do we like him? Unai Emery has arrived at the Emirates, and Julien Laurent, head of the Emery fan club, is here to fly his flag. He's not the only new manager, nor the only talking point. It's a packed penultimate Totally Football Show, and we're wasting precious time blathering. Let's roll. Totally Football Show, sun's out, guns out, big guns. big European guns. Horncastle.
Hello, Macca.
Honigstein.
Hi.
Laurent.
Hello, Ian.
And Macintosh. Let's turn our attention to the Champions League final, for that is where our attention should be. Real, who are looking for their third Champions League in a row and their 13th overall. Liverpool going for their 6th. It's probably not going to be 0-0. But, James Horncastle, is it all Ronaldo versus Mo Salah, or is it more than that?
I think this is a really interesting game, just because, from Liverpool's point of view, they've shown themselves to be quite... It's hard to live with them. In 15, 20 minutes, they can find themselves 2-3 goals. I think that is difficult for even a team like Real Madrid to cope with. However, having said that, I think one of their great skills is that they find themselves adapting to any situation, really, to any context, and there's nothing that phases them, really. They've been there, they've seen it, they've done it. And I think that mentality, that kind of swagger that they had, no matter how badly they're playing, I think there's a belief that they've got the individual brilliance to find a goal out of somewhere, or they can actually, they've got another gear to go to, which I don't think any other club in the world has.
Well, Rafa, I wonder, do Liverpool have that to a certain extent with the things that they've been through this season? I was reminded by the excellent Paul Joyce piece in The Times that they very nearly slipped up at the first hurdle, didn't they? Conceding a penalty to Hoffenheim after about 10 minutes, which was saved by Simon Mignolet. They've had a number of moments in this tournament and in the league where they've taken commanding leads and then wobbled horribly, but they've still got here. They've probably learned a lot this year, haven't they?
Yes, but I would argue that the passage to the final has been relatively smooth. I think it's seen through the prism of Rome, but maybe it had to be there, but from an outsider looking in, it never really looked like there was that much danger of them getting knocked out.
And 23 goals in the group alone. 5-0 conceded? Away to Porto.
Scored.
5-0 away to Porto. They blitzed City. They had the incredible 20 minutes against Roma. Yeah, they're all right, aren't they?
Yeah, they are right. And I think at the beginning of the season, it was quite clear, or at least you had a strong indication, that they were going to be a team that would cause a lot of damage in Europe, because you come up against sides who are not happy playing against good counter-attacking teams. A lot of ball-playing teams who, when they get disrupted, really don't know exactly what's going on and can't find their feet. It's not always possible throughout the 90 minutes, but it was enough to do it in spells against City, certainly against Roma. I mean, Porto were blown away. And you can just see Real Madrid suffering from similar kind of problems. If Liverpool managed to create that bit of chaos that they do so well in the final third and win the ball back and expose these huge gaps that do exist. I mean, this is a Real Madrid team that don't really play as a team very well. They rely on individuals. They rely on their sense of infallibility, invincibility. They have this tremendous psychological edge over almost everyone. But as a collective, they're actually not that impressive. And I think Liverpool will feel that there's a good chance of upsetting them and disrupting them and creating chances. What I would say is that I think Klopp has learned one thing, that the importance of taking your chances is something that he's talked about a lot in finals. And also, I think the first goal, it's a truism that it's really important. But I think especially the way Liverpool and Real Madrid play, you would not want Real Madrid to take the lead. And then Liverpool would really be up against it.
Now, you talk about taking chances. Klopp hasn't got the best track record in finals, and this is something that's going to get talked about quite a lot in the build-up. How much of an issue is that?
I think it's an issue that, at some level, I think annoys him, and it gets brought up again and again. And, of course, I think he'd be happier if he could take his team into this final, saying, you know, I've done it 5 times in a row, now you do it 6 times, and everyone would just nod and says, yes, exactly. In a way, it shows you what it's not so much a show of failure, but actually a show of achievement, because with the exception of the Sevilla game, he was the underdog in all those finals. And when you get to the final with a team that perhaps nobody expected to be there, or they're playing at the very limit of their ability, and then you play against the best team left in the competition, chances are you will not win. You can go through final and final, and I'm sure he would say, maybe I made a mistake here, and maybe I should have done this rather than that, maybe got the tactics wrong, whatever. But on the whole, I think it's hard to point the finger at him and says, you know, Liverpool and Dortmund, they've lost those finals because Klopp was in charge. They certainly wouldn't have been there.
Julian Laurent, one of the reasons that Liverpool, you know, haven't won anything in a while has often been their frailties at the back. They've got Virgil van Dijk now. How much of a difference has that made?
Huge, obviously, since coming in January, even out of shape, a bit out of form as well. But he has not just stabilised that defence, but he's made everybody else better, which is, I think, pretty incredible. When, you know, when you come in January, it's never easy. When you get to a level that is a level that you've never met before, you know, he played in Europe before, but never at that level, you know, never against those teams in those kind of games with so much pressure, so much expectations and so much at stake as well. And I think the way he responded shows what talent he is. I mean, I don't think there was any doubt that he, you know, he was a very good defender. I think the way he adapted to a new team, a new way of playing, a new manager and a new competition in the Champions League is just incredible.
I was surprised just how good he has been, I must say. I was always a little bit...
But you knew he was a very good defender. Yeah. It's just the way he adapted.
He came with that huge price tag and Klopp saying, I want to wait, and thinking, surely there must be one centre-back that can help this team. Do you really have to wait 6 months because you only want this guy and no one else? But I kind of see what they're on about, because... And maybe I think this is one of those things that you only really see properly in the stadium, but the kind of aura and this presence. I've seen players not even bother to challenge for kind of high balls because they're thinking there just is absolutely no point. And I think that kind of impact is worth a lot, because a lot of dangerous situations don't even arise with this guy there. I'm astonished just how much of an improvement and upgrade he has been immediately.
All right, well, that's Liverpool. What about Real Madrid? Ben Haywood is Goal's Spanish football correspondent. He's in Madrid and we can speak to him now. How are you, Ben?
I'm good, thanks. How are you guys?
Very well, thank you very much. Looking forward to this one. Real Madrid's road to Kiev has been a little more pedestrian than Liverpool's, but with the occasional flash of magic. What kind of shape are they in?
It's been rocky, hasn't it? You know, obviously they've played very, very good teams on the way to Kiev. They played Paris Saint-Germain, played Juventus, and of course Bayern Munich. And, you know, a bit of a scare against Juventus, also against Bayern Munich. We haven't seen them at their best, but, you know, Real Madrid know how to win. And, you know, they're in another final, third in a row, and a fourth in 5 years, fourth in 5 years. So they can't be ruled out. Hasn't been, you know, vintage performances. But this team, you know, knows how to win. They're experts at it.
It's been a strange campaign, hasn't it? Because I was fairly sure that Zidane was in a lot of trouble not so long ago. In fact, I actually looked it up, and this is from the Metro on January the 11th, commenting on reports in Spain. They said, Real Madrid have decided to sack Zinedine Zidane at the end of the season, are in talks to replace him with Jürgen Löw, according to reports in Spain. Madrid currently fourth, yada, yada, yada. Sport reports that Madrid president Florentino Perez has already decided to call time on Zidane's reign. Ben, what happened?
Yeah, you know, I think you maybe can take those reports with a pinch of salt, but certainly if Real Madrid had lost to Paris Saint-Germain and gone out in the last 16 of the Champions League, and, you know, take that along with their disastrous league campaign, really, after winning La Liga last season, you know, this season has been calamitous. It's their worst campaign since 2006-2007. They've come third. And so if they'd gone out in the last 16 of the Champions League to Paris Saint-Germain, I think, you know, that time would have been up for Zidane. But if they win the Champions League, it's the third year in a row, it's historic. And that changes everything. That puts a different perspective on the whole season. And I think if they win the Champions League, and, you know, even if they don't, you know, getting to another final really changes things for Zidane and for this team.
Real Madrid haven't been all there, but Ronaldo certainly has. 12 goals from him, including that bicycle kick, the last-minute penalty. He was in the UK press today saying that he has the body of a 23-year-old. Not sure where he's keeping it. And then he third-personed himself by saying that all the supporters are behind Cristiano. So evidently confidence is not a problem.
Yeah, confidence is never a problem, is it, for Cristiano? He believes in his abilities 100%. And, you know, as you mentioned, the goals he scores, he comes alive in this competition. We see it every season, you know. In fact, last season he was being written off. He hadn't scored, I think he only scored 2 goals in the group stages, and then didn't score against Napoli in the last 16. And we're all saying, you know, that Cristiano Ronaldo has this goal drought in the Champions League. And then, of course, he scored 10 from the quarterfinals, between the quarterfinals and the final, to shoot Real Madrid to another trophy. And, you know, he's doing it again this season. Didn't score in either game against Bayern, but he's been scoring in the group stages and the knockout stages. And, of course, you know, big threat, of course, in the final again. So, yeah, insatiable goal record.
Gareth Bale, there's obviously a lot of interest about him. What's his situation? Are we going to see him on the pitch?
It's an interesting one, Gareth Bale, because, you know, he was hauled off at halftime against Juventus, you know, in that second game that Real Madrid lost. And, you know, it was kind of humiliating at the time, and it looked like it might be the end. And he didn't feature as a starter in either game against Bayern. And, you know, was overtaken by Marco Asensio, by Lucas Vazquez, who are, you know, younger guys coming through. And it certainly looked like it may be the end. But in the last 4 or 5 games, you know, he's been scoring goals. He scored a great goal against Barcelona, scored a couple of goals against Celta Vigo, scored again against Villarreal. And, you know, I think he's played himself into the team, played his way into the starting 11. Interesting, if you look at Zidane's lineups for the last game of the season before the Champions League final, going back to last season and the season before, Zidane pretty much picks the team for that last league game that he's going to, you know, go ahead and select in the final. So I expect to see Gareth Bale in the team on Saturday, which a month ago would have seemed, you know, very, very unlikely.
All right, Ben, quick one before you go. What's going to happen? What's the score going to be?
Difficult to pick the score. Yeah, I expect Real Madrid to suffer in this one. I don't think they've come up against a team quite like Liverpool this season. Jürgen Klopp mentioned Marcelo. They're going to obviously try and exploit the weakness, the gaps that he leaves. But Real Madrid know how to win better than any team in Europe. I expect them to suffer, but I expect them to come through and win this one.
That's Ben Hayward, Spanish football correspondent for Goal. I think that the one thing before we move on is the possible lack of options for Klopp. You know, he's had some big injuries, Oxlade-Chamberlain. Lallana's not really quite up to full throttle yet. And then there's Danny Ings and Solanke, you know, aren't equivalent to the options on Real Madrid's bench.
But the dependence on that front three has been like that all season. It's never been different. So we've known it, Klopp known it, the fans, everybody's known that. And they've got there, you know, everybody knew how to play against them and how dependent they were on that front three, and yet they still managed to get there. So it's not going to be any different. The problem is if one of those three is not in a good day, because I don't think just 2 out of 3 is enough against Real Madrid. You need the three pretty much at their best. You need Salah even better than the other two. And that's the complete opposite for Zidane, who has so many options, so many choices to make. Tactically, in terms of formation, do you go 4-3-3, which was Ben was hinting at, with Bale up front, with probably Benzema and Ronaldo? Do you go a flat 4-4-2 with Vasquez and Asensio on each wings, who will help massively Carvajal and Marcelo defensively, and also cover for Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold going forwards? Or do you go with Isco as a free number 10 and, you know, making him hard to pick up by the Liverpool midfield, for example? There's so many options, and he can change at halftime. He can change after an hour. He can change after 70 minutes. After half an hour, Klopp doesn't have that luxury. So it'd be very interesting to see what Zidane starts with. And then if he changes, and also if things don't go well for that front three at Liverpool, what Klopp is going to do?
I think one of the greatest strengths of Liverpool is those power surges that they have over 20-minute periods. But the problem sometimes with that is that the amount of effort it takes, you get to 70 minutes, the team can flame out a little bit. And yeah, when you look to the bench to sort of bring in some sort of freshness, the options aren't there. And I think we've seen, partly because of the game state, let's see, the situations that Liverpool have got in early on against City and against Liverpool, and they maybe take the foot off the gas. But I think also part of the energy, they have allowed teams to get back in. I don't think you can do that against Madrid. We saw that when they played PSG at the Bernabeu. But they have had, what, this two-week period where they can kind of rest and recuperate, which I think is massive. It's more important for Liverpool than it is for other teams, considering the intensity with which they play. I mean, you go back to the last final, Real Madrid against Juventus. Juventus matched Madrid for intensity in the first 45 minutes of that game, and they came out of the dressing room and they were shot. They were knackered. And I think that's a problem.
Okay, let's nail everybody down for a prediction here. James Horncastle, what's it going to be?
Madrid to win.
Rafa Honigstein.
Yesterday, I was convinced, I think that Real Madrid might have the edge, but I'm beginning to think that Liverpool might just do it.
Oh, Rafi, I've changed my mind.
I've changed my mind all the time as well.
Julian Laron.
I go for Real Madrid.
There we go.
I'll say 3-2.
That's what I said. Who said 3-2 to Real Madrid?
All right. That's the Champions League final. When we come back, we have a new face in the Premier League.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power, the home of the Money Back Special. Keep listening to the end of the podcast to find out more.
Right, a lot of managerial changes in the world of football. But before we talk about them, we must make an apology. Earlier in the season, we had a good old laugh about a story involving Sean Dyche and some earthworms that had first been told by the Danish football podcast Fodbold Ministeriet, or the Football Ministry, if you prefer. Now, regrettably, we only credited the Danish podcast bit and we didn't say their name, and they were very upset. And they had every right to be. And speaking as someone who gets extremely vexed when bits of our own podcasts appear somewhere else without credit, I completely understand. We should be better than that. We will be better than that. And we're ever so underskilled, as they say in Denmark. Or, as we say in Essex, sorry. That's the Football Ministry in Denmark, then. Find them on Twitter, Fodbold Podcast. Hey.
Will that satisfy the lawyers?
Yes, I hope so. It's the people posting poo for our letterbox I'm really concerned about. Let's talk about some of those other podcasts, shall we? Because you can find out everything you need to know about everything that's happening at Wembley over this bank holiday weekend in the Totally Football League show. So if you're after the details, there's one show for each final. Now, round the room, who do you think is going to win with your amassed Football League knowledge from Coventry, Exeter?
Coventry.
Exeter.
Coventry.
All right. Shrewsbury, Rotherham.
Shrewsbury.
Rotherham.
I'm a Yorkshireman, Sir Rotherham.
Aston Villa, Fulham. Ooh.
That's a good one. That's a really good one.
Fulham.
Rafa says Fulham, I say Aston Villa.
It should be Fulham, but it's Steve Bruce.
What do you mean he should be?
Promoted.
Why should it be? Why should it be Fulham?
It's like Neil Warnock.
Why
he just
it
does
Fulham?
It. We don't
why
know why he does it.
Why should
so
it be Fulham? Why did you say it should be Fulham?
Because they don't have Steve Bruce, and Steve Bruce is in the playoff final. That's what he does.
Okay, if you want more detailed analysis than that, Totally Football League show. Three previews, one for each final. You just can't go wrong. Now, James Horncastle.
Yeah?
Do you like audiobooks?
I've never listened to one.
What? Is that because there hasn't been an audiobook that you have felt is, oh, that's right up my alley?
Well, no, I think podcasts have, like, you know, longer than an hour, too long.
James,
so an audiobook.
I'm trying to make a point here.
Play
the game, man.
Head the company.
Yes, I would love to listen to an audiobook.
Excellent.
Okay.
Well, I have one that you might like. It's called Gazza in Italy.
Oh,
and
okay.
It's all about Gazza in Italy.
Yeah.
And it's written by Daniel Story.
Okay.
And it's read out by James Richardson.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a winning combination. That is the trifecta that has got me interested in an audiobook.
It's almost like it's the product of extensive talks that began some 9 months ago. You've probably heard Daniel and Jimbo sort of joking about it on the shows. Is it available as an actual book, I hear you ask? No, not yet. It's exclusively an audiobook, and you can find it now on Audible or iTunes.
Who's James Richardson?
Oh, showbiz is so cruel, isn't it?
The train expert.
Oh, is he that guy from the 90s?
Yeah.
Early 90s.
Now he does Strongest Man and Trains.
Oh, it's a good job he's busy and he won't be listening
Channel 5,
to this.
James Richardson.
Right, back to business. Unai Emery has turned up at Arsenal. It's kind of split the fan base. I think there are a lot of people who were really quite getting excited about Mikel Arteta. Matt Scott, our own Matt Scott, he says, this is a tremendously courageous move from Emery. He's following a legacy manager with expectations to win trophies pretty much instantly. He's got to play the Arsenal way. He hasn't got much money to play with. It won't be easy. But Matt admires his cojones. Julien Laurent, do you admire Emery's cojones?
I admire his agent.
Why? Why wouldn't you want to go for the Arsenal? I don't understand why it takes more courage to go to the Arsenal job than to the PhD job. I think the job was available. He applied. I think 58 or 57 other managers applied. They narrowed it to 8 and then to 3. And he was there. He was really impressive in the interviews that he had with Ivan Gazidis and Sven Mislintat and Raul Sanieri, the triumvirate at the club who decides. Stan Kroenke and John Kroenke liked him when he went to Atlanta on Tuesday. I can see why some of the fans were a bit underwhelmed. I get that. For me, if the choice was down to Arteta or Emery, I would pick Emery every single day. I don't think Arteta was ready. He didn't even have a staff to go with him. He didn't turn anything down. He was just not picked. And maybe that made him a bit better. I don't know. But it's interesting. It ticks a lot of boxes of what Arsenal wanted. They wanted, you know, a coach and not a manager, not like Arsene Wenger, someone who would work really hard on the training pitch, would work the players really hard, that had, you know, good organization, structure in his game, with a style of football that is closer to what Jurgen Klopp offers at Liverpool, for example, you know, with a lot of intensity, high pressing, a lot of verticality as well. So I think on that level, he convinced them that he was the right guy for the job. I think the 2 years at PSG was too short to judge him on in the right way, but it was still long enough to see if he has the ability of managing a club like Arsenal. And I think he showed enough there, despite the player power. And again, just to finish on that, it's a different context than the one he had in Paris. It's a different dressing room, especially. And he did struggle at times at PSG with that dressing room, with the leaders in that team, even before Neymar arrived. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, captain and vice captain, I mean, by leaders. But that's not going to be the case at Arsenal. You can expect the players to be on board with his philosophy, like the Sevilla players were on board with his philosophy.
Rafa, what's he walking into at Arsenal?
That is a really good question, because I'm not sure there is a defined target for him. I think they want him obviously to get back into the top four, but he probably will not immediately judged or dismissed if he doesn't make it next year, because they will start as 6 favourites out of those 6 teams competing for the top four.
Maybe that's why a Europa League team is a serial Europa League winning manager.
That thought had crossed my mind too, James, and I think it's not a bad shout at all. I'm really interested to see, aside from the, you know, improvement in results and all that stuff, how he deals with the dressing room that has become very, very comfortable. Will he, you know, gradually ramp up the pressure and get them to play again? Or is he going to go too hard and alienate some of the players? His English is good, but does he have sort of the feel for the atmosphere and kind of gauge the temperature with the people and collectively the people that he's working with to connect with them at some level where they need to buy into this? Because if your way of playing is demanding and takes a lot of effort, it's not going to be enough to just be a disciplinarian to say, unless you run, this and this is going to happen. People really have to believe in you and in those methods for them to do it. And I think that's where I'm just not sure, from the outside looking in, whether he can have that special kind of bond with the players.
But then if they're not on board, then you bench them, which he found really hard, impossible to do in Paris, for example, because a lot of those players who were not so much on board would have called straight away the chairman, who would have said, hang on a minute, like, you know, I'm not playing. Why? I don't see that happening at Arsenal. That's the thing. About Mesut Ozil is a different case, I think, than the rest of the dressing room, and he will have to deal with that. But I think Ozil would do really well in an Emery team, the style of play they're playing. But apart from Ozil, I think the rest should be looking forward to something. I mean, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain left that club because he wanted, you know, new methods, different methods to improve more, because he thought, you know, he was not improving enough. So I don't see why someone like Chambers or Holding or even Aaron Ramsey, you know, all those players with a new manager coming and say, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to work in a completely different manner than what you've experienced for the last, you know, 5-6 years for some of them, 2-3 for others. Because this is, you know, this is what I do. It's new drills, new exercises. It's a new philosophy. It's a lot of that. And I think, why wouldn't you want to be on board of that?
James Horncastle, lot of questions being asked here.
Oh, yeah?
Is that fair? I mean, he won a lot of shiny things at PSG. He won 3 Europa Leagues in a row with Sevilla. He did very well with Valencia. Are we just being picky?
No, I mean, look, I think Emery, to some extent, is a quite, not underwhelming choice, but quite conservative choice. I think one of the reasons why Arsenal fans got excited about Arteta was that he's kind of a blank canvas. You can kind of paint whatever you want to onto that at the moment, because we don't really know much about Arteta and what he would bring, whereas we seem to know quite a lot about Emery. I think it would have been interesting had he come to this job from Sevilla rather than PSG, because I think then, you know, you could understand why PSG went for a guy who was... had showed he was maybe ready for that next step after winning the Europa League so often. And, you know, that is going to be probably the most likely access route for Arsenal into the Champions League next year. You know, from everything that we know about the budget that they have, and also, you know, just look at the kind of financial disparity between them and some of the other teams. I think, and he seemed to be saying yesterday in his press conference that I believe in this group of players. You wouldn't expect him really to say anything else, but given everything we know about the budget there, there is this kind of like, I have to work with what I've got to some extent. And, you know, I think maybe some other managers would have come in and made a few more demands of Salehi and Mislintat and Gazidis rather than Emery, who I think comes into this thinking, this is as good a job as I could have got considering what happened at PSG, which isn't to say he doesn't deserve it. I think he does. But I think maybe some other elite managers might have been put off by the situation in the Premier League at the moment with City and Pep Guardiola, but also the state of Arsenal at the moment.
All of which just makes me feel very sorry for Mikel Arteta, who must have thought that he was almost there. He almost had the job. What does he do now?
He stays where he is. He's just not ready for a job like this. I don't understand why people got so carried away with him and so excited, and even why I don't even understand how he finished in that short list of 3.
Rory Smith from the New York Times did say that he was a little bit worried about Mikel Arteta because the man now has a reputation far in advance of anything that he's actually achieved.
I don't think that's going to be an issue at all. He'll bide his time. If he is as talented as people seem to believe, then maybe City will give him a chance to succeed Pep. Maybe he'll get another offer next summer. Maybe he'll get another offer this summer on the back of the interest that Arsenal showed, because I think people believe that those 3 guys, at least 2 of them, know exactly what they're doing in talking to managers. So I don't see why it's done him any harm. At all.
It's good publicity,
you know? Yeah, I don't get this this idea that, you know, he's going to suffer from the hype and all that nonsense rubbish. There is something special about him, and I think he separates opinion. I think a little bit, Juice has spoken about this before. Some of the players felt him a little bit overbearing. Mm-hmm. Others felt that he's exactly the kind of player that a team like Arsenal needs, somebody who takes responsibility, somebody who shakes others out of their apathy at times. And they obviously saw kind of management or coaching material in him. And I think he can only learn and get better if he keeps working with Pep for another year.
He's not the only managerial mover. James Horncastle, Ancelotti, in for Sarri at Napoli. What happened? Is Sarri off to Chelsea?
Sarri at the moment still has a contract with Napoli. And the only offer on the table for Maurizio Sarri as we speak, it might change, is from Zenit St. Petersburg, kind of doing everything to get him to come and work for them. I don't think it captures his imagination, that job, even though the salary is significantly higher than he has at Napoli at the moment. But this created a real splash in Italy. I think a lot of people really couldn't believe that Carlo Ancelotti would, first of all, come back to Italy after 9 years away. I think it was clear he was angling for a job in the Premier League. The Arsenal job certainly appealed to him. It was a bit surprising that he maybe didn't figure as highly on, or if at all, on the shortlist there. I think maybe that comes back to this debate as to what Arsenal were looking for, a head coach rather than a manager. Yeah, I think in some respects, given what Sadi has achieved at Napoli and how popular he is there, 91 points, they've got better every year. I think he, even though he didn't win anything, you'd maybe say he's the best manager that they've had in their history. This is, I would say, as good a replacement for him as they could get, because it almost instantly makes the fans forget about him and get confident about success in the future.
Rafa, Dortmund have a new manager too. Producer Ben is so scared about my inability to pronounce foreign names that he's written this phonetically. Lucien Favre. Apparently he's just left Nice.
Nicely done.
Yeah.
He's 60 years old. That's like twice the average age of a German football manager.
I know. But he is the guy that Dortmund wanted all along. They wanted to get him last summer. They couldn't get him out of his contract with Nice. They've lived to regret that, of course, with getting Peter Bosch and then Peter Stöger in. And now at last he will arrive. And I think there is a real expectation that with his attention to detail, he is somebody who will stop training and tell a player, you know, please turn your foot 10 degrees to the left because you are having the wrong first touch. You will play better turning your foot a little bit, and you'll be better playing 5 meters to the left as well. That he will bring out much more from what is clearly a very talented squad. I mean, Dortmund have superb players, especially in attacking departments, and they've been so underwhelming relative to their talent. It's somebody like Favre there who has a problem, I think, with longevity because he's quite highly strung and he gets a little bit political with the board. Transfer-wise, it's always quite complicated for him to make up his mind. But the actual coaching on a daily basis is really top-notch. And I think at least for 1 or 2 years, he should really take Dortmund to, if not another level, but at least to the level where they should be. And with Niko Kovac coming in at Bayern, and perhaps Bayern dropping a little bit, we don't know, but there's a possibility. I think we might actually have a bit of a title race next year. I'm quite hopeful.
Ooh, that'd be nice. Hey, just as sexy in the managerial moves, Gary Rowett has left Derby for Stoke. What kind of a job is he walking into?
A bit of a mess, though. But
you weren't enthusiastic about Paul Lambert when he came.
No, I much prefer Gary Rowett, I have to say. And I think that he's going to get the backing of the board financially as well to rebuild that team, because you can expect that a few players are going to leave. But I think they made the right choice.
They can really they expect the right Gary Rowett to leave? Because that's kind of what he keeps doing now.
Yeah, exactly.
He goes for better projects. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Okay.
Well, I thought you were going to mention...
Certainly not going to get me criticising people.
What happens if he's got them top of the championship at Christmas and then a Premier League club comes calling? Yeah, I mean, this is, you know.
I thought you were going to mention Patrick Vieira and replacing Favre at Nice. No,
okay. I wasn't. Is that going to happen?
Yeah, I think that's going to happen, yeah. At least it's quite advanced, I think. The problem is still under contract with New York City FC until December. And Dortmund paid €3 million to get Favre out of Nice. And I think Nice were hoping that they wouldn't have to use some of that money to get Vieira out of New York. But it looked like New York are playing a bit hard-balled right now. And rightly so, because he's doing really well there and they don't want to lose him. So they're still confident in Nice that they will get him. And I think he really wants to go there. But yeah, let's see. But yeah, this one, we should see this one happening.
All right. Elsewhere, Sunderland have gone for Jack Ross. You might remember that name. Jim Burke, Barca Jim on Twitter, was talking about him right at the beginning of the season. Scottish Manager of the Year, did amazing at St Mirren, got them back into the Scottish top flight. And Swansea are in for Graham Potter, because of course they are.
Listeners, do you like shaving and looking smooth and clean?
Yes!
But do you enjoy having to go to the shops for new razors and other shaving supplies?
No!
Well, Cornerstone gives you everything you need for a great shave, and they'll deliver it all right to your door. Cornerstone's super sharp, award-winning blades are engineered in Germany, which is always a good sign, and their range of balms, creams and exfoliators are all environmentally friendly, alcohol-free and suitable for the most sensitive skin. Get £10 off your first order and check out the range for yourself at cornerstone.co.uk/totally and find out why tens of thousands of men have switched over to Cornerstone.
It's the final Totally Football show of the season on Monday, but before that, it's the final Totally Football quiz of the season on Friday. It's 12:30 GMT. It's only on our Facebook page. Let me tell you what's up for grabs. There is a 2016-17 special Bain shirt, a long-sleeved home shirt. That's from classicfootballshirts.co.uk. There's Do You Speak Football by Tom Williams, the excellent new book. There's a glorious World Cup wall chart from Falling Leaf Designs. And, of course, there's an album and 20 packs of stickers from Panini. Head over to facebook.com/totallyfootballshow and see if you can answer the questions. If you've not done it before, I read out questions, you type in the answers, and everyone complains about the speed of their internet. Finally, this week, Grant Holt, yes, that Grant Holt of Norwich and briefly Aston Villa, is a wrestler. The 37-year-old striker, currently on the books at National League side Barrow, started wrestling training this morning. Well, if there's one member of the Totally Football Show team who can straddle the disciplines of football and wrestling, as well as Grant Holt, it's Matt Davis, host of our Parts Unknown wrestling podcast. Hello, Matt.
Hello, Ian. How are you?
Well, I'm all right, thank you. Matt, is this a work or a shoot? And please explain to me what those two terms mean, because I have no idea.
Okay, so a work is when something in wrestling is purported to be real when it's not, and a shoot is something that's real when you're expecting it to be fake. So I think that this is probably somewhere in the middle. I think it's a great publicity stunt by the promotion that he's going to be working for, WAW, who are a British wrestling company based in Norwich, hence the link. But they've struggled a little bit in the last few years because there are a couple of other British promotions who've sort of overtaken them in terms of their status and popularity. So this is a good way to put themselves back on the map. Apparently, he's not going to have his match until next year. It's going to take place at their Fightmare 3 event, where he's going to join up with a tag team called the UK Hooligans. Now, those two are the sons of the two owners of WAW. So that either means that he's taken a year to fully prepare to be a proper wrestler, or, as I suspect, it's just going to be a kind of gimmicky match to get some eyes on their product, and he will be able to appear at various events, albeit not wrestling, in the build-up to his debut.
What does he need to do to prepare to be a wrestler? I mean, presumably pile on, and never, no one's ever said this about Grant Holt, but presumably he needs to pile on some weight.
Well, what he needs to do is use what brung him to the dance, as we say in wrestling, and that is the fact that he's a bloody big bugger. So yeah, if he piles on some weight, that will probably help him. He's not the most gregarious footballer, I don't think, Grant Holt. He's somebody who I watched when he played for Forest, so he'll need to kind of be a bit showier maybe than we've seen before. But it's going to take quite a lot of athleticism, depending on what he does. In terms of his in-ring work, he's going to have to learn how to throw a fake punch convincingly, obviously, which is something that a lot of people find very, very difficult, as is running the rope. So when you bounce across the ring off the ropes to get to your opponent, that's something that some people never learn. So it's quite tricky. It's not going to be easy for him, but I think if he goes into it with the expectation of just sort of muddling through, and that's what other people think, he'll have a decent shot. He's not the first footballer to swap.
No, he's not. He's not. I was just going to say, there was, of course, Tony Adams, who older listeners might recall, lifted up Steve Morrow and body slammed him into the windy turf, breaking his arm. Now, you mean Tim Wieser, don't you? The German goalie.
Yeah, German international. He signed with WWE's developmental system a couple of years back. He did have a match in Munich in 2016, but he hasn't been seen since. And there was Stuart Tomlinson, who was former Burton Albion keeper. He used to get a lot of stick from opposition fans for being fat, but it turned out he was just ridiculously stacked with muscle. He was with WWE's developmental system for a couple of years too, but he never made it to the main roster. His wrestler name was Hugo Knox. So I don't know if Grant Holt's going in as gorgeous Grant, maybe, or something like that. But yeah, he's following in the footsteps of a couple of his fellow players.
I tell you what, if you do like wrestling, check out Parts Unknown every Wednesday. Matt's the host. It's packed with wrestling experts, and it's very, very good. Right, time to get the odds from Paddy Power with producer Ben.
Thank you very much, Ian. Lee Price from Paddy Power, you're back. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm slightly anxious about the end of football this weekend, but I'm very well for now.
Well, let's get right into it then. Real Madrid versus Liverpool in Kiev, Champions League final. What's going to happen?
I think it's going to be a blockbuster. I hope Liverpool win. I'm not a Liverpool fan, but I really hope they do win and end this narrative about English clubs being naff in Europe. Our odds make Real Madrid the slight favourites, though. I wonder why that is. They're 6-5 to win in 90 minutes. Liverpool are quite a chunky 2-1, but I think they'll do it.
Well, I am a Liverpool fan, so I'm very excited about this, and I'm going to put my money on them winning. Is there a money-back special if they don't?
There absolutely is. So your money back as a free bet if Liverpool don't win the Champions League, if a certain Mr. Salah scores in 90 minutes. which sounds like it's going to be inevitable. That obviously applies to losing first, last, anytime goal scorer bets. What odds, Paddy markets, and max refund £10.
Let's stick with Salah for a sec. What are the odds, please, on him being the first goal scorer and then Sergio Ramos being the last goal scorer?
Interesting. Salah has been so popular in our goal scoring markets that he actually went odds on to score any time during the final. Hashtag Liverpool fans. He's 10-3 to score first. Sergio Ramos, the big bastard, is 25-1 to score last. If you combine those selections, you're looking at around 111-1.
I'm on it. And what about 4+ goals in this one? Because these teams are very good going forward and slightly suspect at the back.
When you sent this through, I was worried that you were chasing the odds, but actually this is quite a tight price. It's 11-10, so almost evens that there's more than 4 goals in the Champions League final. Absolute madness.
And Jurgen Klopp doesn't have the greatest record in any finals, certainly not in European finals, but as a Liverpool fan, I think that this is going to be his moment. So is he going to break his glasses?
If he's got a worse record than anything other than finals, it's breaking his glasses. We can go 33-1, I'll give you, that he breaks his glasses. I hope he does. It probably means they're going to win.
All right, from Champions League then to Championship. It's Villa versus Fulham at Wembley. The winner gets to go up to the Premier League. Who's it going to be?
It's the old boys versus the young boys. Villa are 9-4. Fulham are 13-10 and the favourites. They play the better football, but does that always work at Wembley? Not for England.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com. 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org. And when the fun stops, stop. Thank you ever so much, James Horncastle.
My pleasure as always, Ian McIntosh.
Thank you, Rafa Honigstein.
Thank you, Ian. I very much enjoyed the season with you.
Oh, thanks for coming, man. Julien Laron.
Merci.
Thank you. Give us a follow on at The Totally Show on Twitter and The Totally Football Show on Facebook. Remember to check out Galazzo and The Totally Football League Show. Loads of stuff on there. And don't worry, Jimbo's back on Monday.
The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.
Gentlemen, are you feeling a bit crap? Well, you're not alone. Everyone does at some point. But the thing people don't realise is just how common it is in chaps like you and me. Last year, 76% of all the suicides in Britain were male. That's 4,287 men, a figure not much smaller than the average League Two attendance last season. On average, 12 men take their own life every single day, meaning that the leading cause of death for men under 45 in the UK is suicide. Scary, huh? But that's part of the problem. There's still a strong social stigma around depression and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and seeking help when they need it. That's why we at the Totally Football Shows are working with Calm. They're the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide in the UK. Every day from 5 p.m. till midnight, they provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. They've also got a website and a free magazine packed with the kind of information you need if you or any of your mates are having a rough time, as well as some cracking stuff on comedy, bands, film, and of course football too. So if you are feeling crap, find Calm at thecalmzone.net for support and some straight up manspiration.